B. Carrollton, News Talk, 1330, FM 106.3.
Good morning, welcome to the Community Voice. I'm Steve Radick, your host. Delighted to have you with us this beautiful morning, and we're very pleased to have back. We skipped a year, but we're gonna do this every year. What do you say?
I'm in, all in.
And the voice you just heard was that of Coach Nick White of Carrollton High School, history teacher and wrestling coach and the whole litany of things.
A few things.
A few other things. And he's agreed to come in like he did. I think it was June 27th of 2022. And we did a program on the Declaration of Independence as we rev up and get ready for Independence Day. I think it's next Thursday of next week, and July 4th. And it's really, the more we dig into it, the more we're learning that there's a whole enormous story behind the Declaration, and that goes well beyond, oh, that's just something Thomas Jefferson came up with. So with that in mind, let's kind of start out. We, you know, in a lot of things in history, you being a history teacher, we tend to view them through the lens of 2024.
Right.
And that's not exactly the best way to view history, because 2024 is not the same thing as 1724 or 1824, and you just have to put that in context. But the colonies had recovered from the French and Indian War, which they had joined the British, and the British had just completed the Seven Years' War. So bring us, kind of give us that feel of that context and how that led to the reason that England needed money.
Yeah, so, you know, early on, the fight for North America, the big three that were still in play were England, France, and Spain. And Spain had kind of vacated their use of this side of the continent. So really, it was the English and the French who, you know, fought the Hundred Years' War. They hate each other, and they're fighting for this piece of land. And the English colonies, you know, they were the ones that did the majority of the fighting and the dying and the spending during this war. You know, the Seven Years' War, French and Indian War, same thing. And it is, you know, the French and the Native Americans vastly fighting against, you know, the British, basically. You know, the colonists still considered themselves British at the time, even though, you know, there were rumblings of, you know, some self-government and things of that nature. But long story short, you know, the war takes place, England wins that war, the British win the war, and when they're done, they do two things that really impact, I think, ultimately leaving England. One of them is, you know, making the colonists pay for that war with the taxes, and I know we're going to get into that, because, you know, it's expensive. You fight a war, it's expensive. You're fighting guerrilla warfare, you're fighting, you know, non-traditional type war and traditional type war at the same time. You got supplies, so there's a lot of money that's got to be recovered there.
Supposed to pay the soldiers too,
right? You're supposed to. And then there's the proclamation of 1763. So at the end of the Seven Years' War, they tell all of the English settlers, hey, we just fought for all this land here, you're forbidden to use it, you've got to stay where you are. And so that sows a little discontent, right? So I just fought for this land, I've died for this land. There's, you know, wives that don't have husbands that come home, or children mm-hmm. that don't come home. So they're already upset. Well, now you can't use the land that you were fighting for, and we're gonna raise taxes on you guys and make you guys take the brunt of the hit financially as well. And so obviously, you know, you do something like that to somebody, hey, why don't you go to fight and die, lose some friends, lose some loved ones, but also I'm going to have you pay for the thing that you fought and died for, oh, and you can't use it. So, you know, it's going to sow a lot of discontent among the locals, basically.
We hope that every American adult has heard the phrase taxation without representation
right.
in relation to the Declaration, but maybe, maybe not. And that was a British principle, basically. Without direct representation in the parliament, the legislative body, you shouldn't be taxed. And that was kind of out the window.
Right. And I think a lot of people on both sides of this coin don't get the crux of the matter, which is not the taxes. It's not having a say in the taxes. You know, I see the memes where it's like, hey, you know, 200 years ago, we fought a war over, you know, a 2% tea tax. What are we doing? Well, it's not about the amount of tax money. It's about having someone with a say. You're going to tell me I got to do something, and there's nobody representing me, which is why we have that representative government that we have today, because we just want someone to step up and say, wait a minute, guys, we can't just continue to crush or oppress, which is a big word, you know, liberty and oppression. We need to talk about that later, but we want to have somebody in there saying, you know what, we don't want to pay that tea tax. Like, why are you guys not paying some of this? And just kind of making it as equal as we possibly can.
Yeah, and the British even reduced the taxes when America pushed back at it, but not completely removed them.
No, and so, you know, a lot of the colonists said, you know what, we're going to boycott tea, which is why so many Americans drink coffee now. A lot of people don't understand that. We used to be strictly tea, you know, that's what we did. That's how we got our caffeine. And then part of the boycott was, you know what, you guys can keep your tea. We're going to start drinking coffee, and we'll get it somewhere else. And so the British were like, wait a minute, this is impacting us financially. Let's find a way to make it, to, you know, to make it work. And so they do back off for a little while, but obviously we know the climax of this story is the American Revolution.
I didn't know that. I never thought of that.
Yeah, think about it. We're all coffee people now. Starbucks on every corner. That's part of it, was boycotting British goods, right? British dresses, British, you know, the daughters of the American Revolution, the, you know, the daughters of liberty, they were like, hey, we'll stop wearing the latest fashions from Europe, and we'll start making our own clothes. We'll stop drinking tea, and we'll figure out something else.
And that's how the First Continental Congress protested this, with a boycott, simply.
Yes.
And a very peaceful boycott.
And a lot of people say we're going to boycott these things, but this
was
this
the first
to work,
yeah.
It had to, everybody had to buy in here. You know, everybody had to buy in and live that life for it to impact England significantly enough for them to notice. And it did, and it worked. And so they did back off for a little while. But again, you know, not everything was fixed. There was still no representation in Parliament for the colonists. And that's ultimately what drives us to, you know, where we're going to talk about today.
Well, let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about Lexington, Concord, Bunker Hill, et cetera, when we return after these words.
Health is a journey. It's making better choices, even when it's not easy. It's taking care of yourself and the people you love. At Tanner Health System, we're there for you with every step, with primary care, heart care, cancer care, women's care, orthopedics, surgical services, and so much more. We're dedicated to helping you live and feel your best. So let's get on that journey to health. You've got places to be for many years to come. Find us at Tanner.org.
The Customized Academic Scholar Journey at Oak Mountain Academy is individually designed to provide students with a personalized, clearly defined academic track that earns the student a series of distinctions upon graduation. This journey enables academically driven students to pursue a focused, rigorous course of study personalized to their wants and desires. I'm Patrick Uran, head of school, inviting you to journey with us on the mountain. For more information, visit us at oakmountain.us. Discover your journey at OMA. Prepare, explore, and achieve.
Welcome back to the Community Voice. I'm Steve Gratt, your host. We're very pleased to have in the studio Coach Nick White, Carrollton High School history teacher and wrestling coach. Not necessarily in that order of priority or whatever, but anyway, he's agreed to come back in this year. And we're examining the Declaration. And I've just been enlightened to know that we drink coffee instead of tea because of the tea party.
That's it.
Anyway, so America now is boycotting British goods, and we had the First Continental Congress, and right after the First Continental Congress adjourns, 1775, British declares Massachusetts to be in open rebellion. Mm-hmm. So tell us, so that's when Lexington Concord happens. So focus in on that immediate time frame.
Yeah, so, I mean, at this point in time, Massachusetts has been the main cause of the stink, if you will, to the British. And so they're basically under military rule at this point, right? You've got, literally, you have soldiers, which is when you read, you know, our documents, whether it's the Declaration of Independence or the Constitution, you're going to read about these things. Like, why is this in here? Well, you've got British soldiers walking around the street doing what they want to, right? Long story short, like, there's just a lot of tension building, you know. If you're a shop owner, right, and you've got to hire extra work, are you going to hire the British soldier, or are you going to hire the colonist? Or are you going to hire the soldier because he's going to protect you, there's going to be less trouble there? Well, now we got people out of jobs, right? So tension's mounting because people don't have as many jobs as they want. And you've got these soldiers who are always on patrol, asking you what you're doing, why you're doing it, putting your feet to the fire, enforcing laws that haven't really been accepted in Massachusetts for 100 years or 150 years. You know, we've been governing ourselves, right? Electing our own constables and governors and judges. And now all of a sudden, you have this, you know, whip crack, so to speak, and these guys are here. So tension starts to mount, and, you know, firearms are not, you know, it's the Second Amendment to, you know, the Constitution. We'll get there, I'm sure, and if we don't, we don't. But, you know, it's important because without a way to fight back and protect yourself here, Lexington and Concord doesn't happen. So, you know, the patriotic people of the time period, the people that were pushing the issue, they start to, you know, stockpile some arms and munitions, and you know, eventually the English find out about it, and it comes to a head, right, with our militiamen and minutemen, and you have the battles at Lexington and Concord, which, you know, kind of sets the table. So that happens almost about a year before the Declaration of Independence is even, you know, thought of.
So I understand they were, let's see, at Concord was where the ammunition was, but they went to arrest John Hancock and Sam Adams.
Right.
Who had fled to Lexington, and the ammunition was at Concord.
Yep, and those two guys, leaders of what you call the Sons of Liberty, highly recommend you guys, you know, if you want to hit a quick Google search on those guys, they are one of the primary reasons we are a country at this point, you know, in 2024, because without the leadership and pressing the issue of those guys, we may not have had our conflict or our climax come to a head. And if we don't have that, we don't have a Declaration of Independence. We don't have a country without people pushing the issue. Sometimes the issue must be pushed, even if it's uncomfortable. And these guys were being persecuted, prosecuted, sought out for arrest. And it's because of the things they were doing, right? Which, you know, may or may not be unsavory or savory to the listeners, but like they were pushing the issue, which is why we get to the Battle of Lexington and Concord, like you said.
And basically, and the Minutemen rose to the occasion. But I imagine there was probably a large segment of the population that says, hey, you guys back off, you're creating trouble. You know, we're British, we've always been British. You know, this boycott, you know, and getting arms together. And,
yeah.
You know, I mean, we can live with these troops.
Yeah, and there was not a full commitment from the colonies of, hey, let's go push the issue and become independent. Because again, you think about it, your entire life you've been raised, you've been told you're British, and you see that flag flying, and so there is a little bit of loyalty there for everybody.
God save the Queen,
right? You know, but then there's this group of radical folks that say enough is enough, and you know, it had to make sense. And I know we've got a lot of documents to get into, and speaking of sense, you know, common sense is one of those things that starts to finally persuade you know, loyalists, people that were loyal to the crown, to say, wait a minute, it just makes too much sense for us not to be a free and independent nation. And so, again, it picks up steam. You see what's happening in Massachusetts, the committees of correspondence, right? You know, Paul Revere and those guys sending out information to the rest of the colonies saying, this is how we are being treated, and if you are not careful, you will be treated the same way. And that really picks up the steam for all of the colonies to get involved, including Georgia, in saying, wait a minute, enough is enough. Let's send this thing over to King George and let him know we've had enough.
And you say common sense, that's Thomas Paine?
Yeah, Thomas Paine. It's a pamphlet, sells 500,000 copies. And basically, you know, we talk about common sense being uncommon. It was uncommon, the knowledge of the things that the British were doing to the colonists, right?
Well, the colonists at that time only had how many people? Was it like 2 million or something?
Yeah, it was a small number. So for it to sell 500,000 copies is pretty impressive. So, you know, some of those were going overseas as well. But what it does is it educates people and kind of opens their eyes, lifts the scales off their eyes, so to speak, and say, hey, just so you know, it makes no sense for us to operate under the current way of things, right? We are smart enough. We can educate ourselves. We can govern ourselves. We're allowing people that have no idea how we live, think, eat, and breathe to do that for us. And so it does help generate a little steam for the colonists to say, all right, you know what? I am on board with these Sons of Liberty. I'm on board with Massachusetts, and let's push the issue.
So in May of 1775, the Second Continental Congress was convened at Philadelphia. And then in June of that same year, we had the Battle of Bunker Hill, where Washington was supposed to take command, but he didn't get there in time.
Yeah, so you know, Washington is made the commander, basically, in chief of the Continental Army, and he doesn't get there in time. And this is where, you know, like, you to understand battles during that point in time, the team, if you will, or the side that retreats is the loser. Well, the Americans kill the British in a 2-to-1 ratio. They kill almost 2-to-1 ratio, but the Americans eventually retreat because we've only got so many colonists, and England can continue to replenish their troops. And so that's almost, you know, that kind of sets the tone of how important British control was to the British. They were willing to sacrifice that many men to continue to control the colonies. And so, yeah, the Battle of Bunker Hill takes place. We officially lose that battle because we retreat, but again, kill the English in a 2-to-1 ratio.
So at the Second Continental Congress, then we move toward the Declaration. And of July 4, 1776, 248 years ago, I believe. Mm-hmm. And with that, we have numerous grievances that are attributed to King George. I think there are, what, how many, 30 of them?
So I've got 27 listed 27? In front of me. And I guess, so what I like to teach my students is it's not the document, it's not the Declaration of Independence, it's the why people felt the way they felt to write the Declaration of Independence and the impact of it. The document's extremely important. We need to look at it, but there's a lot of feelings inside that document, things that the colonists felt, and then what's the impact of that document? Well, the impact is a war, right? The impact is an all-out war that takes, you know, some time and lives and sweat and blood. So as you read these 27 grievances, and I think in the document they call them usurpations, right? You know, repeated usurpations of the king. The vast majority of these have to deal with not feeling seen, not feeling represented. And so it has to deal with he stopped us from representing ourselves, and he stopped this, and he stopped this. And a lot of it has to do with representation. And so I guess one thing that I would like to bring to 2024, right? Here we are 248 years later, like you said, and we have people that don't care about their representation. They don't know who their local representatives are. They don't know, you know, who their two state senators are. They don't know what those people stand for, even. They just are, a lot of people are voting for either a Republican or a Democrat just because that's what they're supposed to do, and they have no clue who their representation is. They don't know if that person actually represents who they are. And we did. So for me, it's not so much the taxes, it's the representation. We fought a war to have representation and to be independent. And 248 years later, the majority of the people that I know and do community with have no clue who their representatives are. They don't know what they stand for. And so we want to know why things are going the way that they're going. Why? And I don't want to get political. I know that's not our...
Oh, I can.
Yeah, you can. So, but like, we want to know why things go the way they are. Well, a lot of that rests on us.
Sure.
There were people that cared enough to have representation to die for it, you know, in 1776 to 1781. But here we are 248 years later. We can't even take time to read a YouTube ad or an article or something to know who we're voting for. And so you look at those 27 grievances, a lot of them have to do with we're not being allowed to self-govern. Well, now here we are. We can self-govern, and now we're not.
Yeah, you've got to have an informed electorate. One thing you said last time we were here that stuck with me was that the principles surrounding the document really transcend. I don't remember exactly how you put it.
Yeah.
Because we're dealing with imperfect guys who wrote it. And so we tend to demonize them because they were imperfect. As they say, nobody's perfect. I like to say everybody's really imperfect.
Yeah, I mean, and that's true.
But But yeah, but one thing that we kind of ran out of time last time, and I want to do this time, was, which I did not know until a couple of years ago, in the first draft, and there were several first drafts, and we're going to talk about that more after the next break, but in the first draft, there was also a paragraph outlawing, prohibiting slavery. And Georgia and South Carolina voted against it. And it seems very clear during the Constitutional Convention and during this that the founders were very intent on holding the Union together, that everybody, they weren't going to balkanize the country. But anyway, the paragraph that was in one of the first drafts prohibiting slavery reads as follows. It takes just a second, but bear with me. Quote, he, and we're talking about George, King George, quote, he has waged cruel war against human nature itself, violating its most sacred rights of life and liberty in the persons of a distant people who never offended him, captivating and carrying them into slavery into another hemisphere, or to incur miserable death in their transportation thither. This piratical warfare, this opprobrium of infidel powers, is the warfare of the Christian king of Great Britain, Christian capitalized, determined to keep open a market where men capitalized, should be bought and sold. He has prostituted his negative for suppressing every legislative attempt to prohibit or to restrain this execrable commerce. And that is, this assemblage of horrors might want no fact of distinguished die. He is now inciting those very people to rise in arms against us and to purchase that liberty of which he has deprived them by murdering the people on whom he has obtruded them, thus paying off former crimes committed against the liberties, capitalized, of one people, whose crimes which he urges them to commit against the lives of another, unquote. And that was voted down by Georgia and South Carolina. So we can only reflect on what it would have been if slavery had been prohibited from the very, very, very beginning. We're going to take a break and come back, and we've got more. We're going to talk about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness when we return.
Health is a journey. It's making better choices, even when it's not easy. It's taking care of yourself and the people you love. At Tanner Health System, we're there for you with every step, with primary care, heart care, cancer care, women's care, orthopedics, surgical services, and so much more. We're dedicated to helping you live and feel your best. So let's get on that journey to health. You've got places to be for many years to come. Find us at Tanner.org.
The World Language Scholar Journey at Oak Mountain Academy is designed to provide students with a clearly defined, curriculum-based track to acquire essential knowledge and skills for success in biliteracy fields of study. The successful completion of this journey provides colleges with a method to recognize a rigorous foreign language immersion experience for all students at Oak Mountain Academy. I'm Patrick Uran, head of school, inviting you to journey with us on the mountain. For more information, visit us at oakmountain.us. Discover your journey at OMA. Prepare, explore, and achieve.
Good morning. Welcome back to Community Voice. We're with Coach Nick White, and we're talking about the Declaration of Independence. We all, hopefully, you know the thing, the life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But I'm going to read this, and then I'll turn it over to Nick, Coach Nick, to go with it. But both in the Virginia Declaration of Rights and the Declaration of Rights of the First Continental Congress, they talked about property. And we don't find that in the Declaration. In the, for instance, in the Virginia Declaration of Rights, there was a draft that said that all men are by nature equally free and independent and have certain inherent rights of which they enter into a state of society, they cannot by any compact deprive or divest their posterity, namely the enjoyment of life and liberty, which means acquiring and possessing property and pursuing and obtaining happiness and safety. Also, and then it was apparently Ben Franklin and Jefferson who started playing down the use of the word property. And then the Committee of Five took it from there, and we ended up with life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So if you would kind of address that and address John Locke's role in moving us to that language.
Yeah, John Locke is extremely influential in our Declaration of Independence and really the Constitution. You know, and he had written several different books, The Treatise of Government, and you know, he lived 1632 to 1704. So this is a guy that's fresh on educated people's minds, right? Because they had read him, 70 years prior or a little bit before that. And they're reading him as they're becoming educated. And he is a guy that dealt with government that was unfair, right, in England and some different things. And so he goes about what a government and its people, what their roles are for one another. Like being born into a government, you kind of enter into a contract, and we as U.S. citizens, we're in a contract with our government, and we have a role, and the government has a role, and what is that role? And when the one side or the other is not performing that, is it okay to overthrow a government, right? And what are the steps to do that, right? And one of the things that a government should protect, according to John Locke, is your right to life. That's unalienable. That's given to you from your creator, is what he says, and that's what this document says.
God-given.
Yeah, it's a God-given right to life, right, which we could get into that as well. You have a God-given right to liberty, and that's a word I talked about earlier, man. It's such a deep word, and a lot of times we just skip over words because we feel like we know what they mean, but the word liberty is freedom from oppression. And you just talked about an oppressed people in the previous segment, right? So if we have the right to life, to be alive, and we have the right not to be oppressed, those two alone, I feel like, are the responsibility of a government to make sure a certain group of people are not oppressed. And then John Locke said property early on, right? Well, we find out that there is, a limited space of property available in the world. And so I think our forefathers, you know, as things continue, we make things better. It's what we're supposed to do. Like in 2024, we're supposed to make things better. They say, let's go with the pursuit of happiness, right? Because maybe property doesn't make
everybody
happy.
Well, they used occasionally the term estate. And
right.
Not everybody had
an estate.
Property.
Exactly. So, you know, what is something that we believe our people are should have the right to do? And it's the pursuit of happiness, right?
But I want to jump in on that because back to the historical context, pursuit of happiness back in 1776 was different than the pursuit of happiness in 2024.
Correct.
The word virtue comes to mind. I mean, they thought about living a good life, et cetera, and being virtuous. Whereas we think now pursuit of happiness is how much money do you have in bank, your 401k, cars, planes, boats, whatever, houses, big houses.
Right.
So it was pursuit of happiness was basically had a different meaning back then.
Yeah, I mean, I think according to Jefferson, I think one of the ways he derived it was a meaningful life,
mm-hmm.
right? The pursuit of happiness, and if you look back to the ancient Greeks and the Romans, they wanted to live a life that was so meaningful that when they died, they continued to live on through their stories and their lore, and they did that, right? And so these men did that as well. They lived a meaningful life because we're still talking about them, you know, in 2024. And so I think, you know, we get caught up saying, I want a boat, or I want to go to Hollywood, and I want to be famous on TikTok. But no, it's to live a meaningful life that has impacted others in such a way that when your body passes away, that your life does not. You live on through the stories of your loved ones and your friends and your community. Oh, man, this guy was so great because this is what he put into our community, right? And so we do mess up on that. We think, well, I get the right to be happy. I can do this and be this. Well, that's not it. You have the ability to be meaningful.
Our gratitude this morning to Coach Nick White, Carrollton High School. Go out and celebrate Independence Day next Thursday and reflect, if you will, on the Declaration of Independence. Thank you for listening. Go out and make it a great day. You're in tune to WLBB Carrollton.